Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Hey, it's Todd. Before we get started, if you like what you hear or you have any questions about this podcast, please tweet at me at @Todd_Garner on Twitter. Look forward to hearing from you.
For nearly 30 years, Todd Garner has overseen blockbuster films like Con Air, Anger Management, Triple X, 13 Going on 30, and Black Hawk Down.
Why are they letting you make these movies?
Join Todd as he shares tips and stories from the front lines of producing in Hollywood.
I'm Adam Sandler.
I'm Rebel Wilson.
This is Jeff Probst.
I'm Kaylee Cuoco.
I'm Eli Roth.
This is Marlon Wayans.
Hey, it's Ed Helms.
This is Shay Mitchell.
Everybody, this is Kevin James, and this is The Producer's Guide.
The Producer's Guide.
The Producer's Guide.
The Producer's Guide with Todd Garner.
Todd Garner.
Todd Garner.
Todd Garner.
What a combination.
All right, I'm here with Bo Flynn. Hello, Bo.
Hello, Todd Garner. How are you, my dear friend? How's your quarantine going today?
My quarantine, it's so funny because it's really the most bizarre time because I sincerely don't know what day it is. In the middle of the day, my son's home from college. My daughter is doing, and he's doing homeschooling. I mean, you know, online schooling. And my daughter is doing online schooling. And my daughter and son came out at 3 o'clock and went for a swim. So I jumped in the pool and I had my phone connected to the speakers and it rang like 4 times. And I'm like, what the f*** am I doing? It's Tuesday. What? I'm working. Why am I in the... But it's just the most bizarre, weird, long, stretched out weekend. It's so disconcerting. How are you doing? How's your family?
It's so funny. So funny. It's so funny you say that is because the other day, it was last week, it was beautiful here. And I've been very impacted personally by the weather. It was very rainy here for a long period of time. And I was in Atlanta where it was really rainy. And then it became nice. And like you at 3 o'clock, I found myself outside, you know, just sitting outside making calls. And I'm like, this is really pleasant. This is really nice. Normally, like, I love being in the office. I'm either on set all day long and don't ever see the sun, or I'm in the office early and leave at night. So there are a few silver linings of this quarantine in terms of, you know, how to kind of keep the soul healthy. But thank you for asking. Fortunately, my family is well. Everyone is good. Homeschooling has been a real adjustment here for us. And really just finding a rhythm and a schedule that works for everyone in the house. That has been a challenge. But over the course of time, we're figuring it out. And I have taken over my wife's home office and we fight over that. But I've really been trying to set kind of work hours from here and get some things done. And it's every week we find ourselves getting more and more things done. We're finding ourselves coming up with new ideas, ways to be more productive. I do a daily Zoom with the company every day at noon. You know, even if there's no agenda per se, it's just still good to keep everyone kind of on a routine. So everyone has to take a shower and get dressed and we meet online. We talk about sometimes the world. We talk about what's going on in our business. How are we going to get back? Ideas of new systems and protocols. And then we talk about new projects. And so we kind of quickly did like a reverse into development mode. You know, we were in heavy production mode and and then we just kind of threw it in reverse and started going into development. And so that's been a big shift creatively and for our mindset, but it's been great. We've been moving a lot of things forward, and that's a good feeling while keeping tight eye on what's going on and around the world and how we can get back to our sets.
So I want to talk practically with you for a second. So practically, what pre-COVID, what did your company look like? Where is it based geographically? How many employees do you have? Like just nuts and bolts. How does your company normally work if you're not all locked in your homes?
So So I'll take you through it, because pre-COVID we were on set in Atlanta in the middle of shooting a movie called Red Notice for Netflix, and so basically I'm there every day on set. That's very important to me. Scott Sheldon, who is a senior VP at my company, he's there most of the time. I think it's a great experience for him to be on set. He's got a great relationship with the director and the stars of the film. And then we have two CEs back in the office in Los Angeles, and then a couple of assistants, and then a really kind of aggressive intern program that I'm very proud of. So the creative executives were back in LA. They're moving projects forward. We have a weekly development call. We were on set shooting Red Notice and at the same time, we're concurrently prepping a movie for Warner's new line in DC called Black Adam. That was the situation before we had to put Red Notice on hold and everyone had to go home and self-isolate.
Yeah, we'll talk about that because we were both in Atlanta communicating before and
yeah,
during.
Yeah, often.
And you also have some stuff in post too. Let's start there. Walk me through what's in post and kind of how each company is dealing with the various stages of where your movies are in the post-production process.
So we were deep in post on a movie called Jungle Cruise for Walt Disney Company. You and I actually had spoken about Jungle Cruise when you and I had done the first podcast.
I think we had just wrapped.
It was very different days, very different time. And we were the movie we had just locked. We had scored the film, and we were we had about 150 visual effects shots to go out of 2,000, and we were getting ready to go on the mix stage. And I was leaving Atlanta. I was going to leave the set of Red Notice to get back at least for a final playback of the mix in Los Angeles. So we were minutes away of finishing Jungle Cruise. Now, it's interesting because obviously we because of COVID-19 and how passionate we are about Jungle Cruise and wanting to make sure we have a long runway that we can kind of take advantage of the theme parks and all of the systems of Disney, we pushed the movie to July 30th, 2021. But I don't think, Todd, that we would have had the movie even ready for our July 24th, 2020 release date, even with just a week to go to finish the movie. I think it would have been really close. So it's, we were kind of thrown, as all of us were, that big of a shutdown and really not able to do anything. But we're hoping very soon that we can, once the restrictions are lifted, that we can get back responsibly on the mixing stage. We can keep a very, very small group of people and socially distance ourselves to get that final week of mixing in on the stage for Jungle Cruise.
And also practically, thinking about scoring pictures now. I mean, what people might not realize is what you're talking about in terms of mixing and in terms of scoring the movie is when you're mixing the movie, there are generally three or four mixers that are mixing different effects, levels, tracks, dialogue, different, you know, all of the different tracks that go into the audio of the motion picture. Plus there's composers there and there's the music editors there. There's so many people crammed into what essentially looks like a movie theater. There's a big screen with some seats, and practically you probably could social distance fairly easily there. And practically you will be able to do that effectively, safely, and responsibly. Less practically will be how the f*** do you compose a movie with 450 musicians in essentially a space that's kind of like your high school theater, right? Or half a high school basketball court is what these things look like. Same height, exactly. You know, with good soundproofing around. How are we going to do that? So like Tenet is a movie that they're finishing at Warner Brothers that is scoring, and they're thinking about doing the whole thing virtually, having each person in a separate location and mixing it somehow, putting them all on different tracks. I mean, these are unprecedented times that are going to lean on technology so much to figure out how you can put, because, you know, practically if you're going to put each musician 6 feet apart, you probably could get 100 musicians safely in a space. But even then, you're in a closed
space. Yeah, I think even probably like 30 or 40, maybe, right? I mean, we have to break up all the tracks.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. No, you're right. It's a really good point. It's funny you bring it up because I guess now in retrospect, Todd, we just slid then, you know, kind of into home with our scoring because we had a massive score on Jungle Cruise. The movie is a throwback that, you know, that celebrates African Queen and Indiana Jones. So it has a huge, epic, giant score from James Newton Howard with hundreds of musicians, to your point. So that, and we had finished it just, I think we finished the score and in February. So it was just in time before this, because you're right. We would have had to come up with a whole new system. We would have had a handful of musicians in a room. We would have had to do it virtually. And while there are, while we already are seeing real technological advancements in the virtual realm, there is still to a degree, nothing like all being in a room with your composer, with your orchestrator, with your arranger, with the director, with my partners, you know what I mean? And then sitting in a room with hundreds of musicians and just getting a feel of that, letting that music wash right through you live. You know what I mean? It's personally just such a powerful experience. One of the many reasons why I love what we get to do, but also is like, it really lets you have real candid creative conversations right there on the fly of what's working and what's not, especially in an emotional medium like our business, right? It's like, cause I feel like I have it. I feel like I am the average moviegoer, you know, in terms of like, I feel like I like what the world likes. So it's like, I feel like if I'm emotionally moved by the notes that are coming out of that scoring stage, I feel like a good portion of the audience will as well. So that could be potentially really challenging, particularly if we're in the midst of it and we're in the center of this right now. I'm sure Chris Nolan is coming up with all kinds of groundbreaking ways and technology to finish his movie. And that also kind of fits his style also. But I think in some more traditional techniques, I think it could be a real challenge. And that's something that's very daunting as I talk it through with you.
And we're going to get to publicity and release of your movie in a moment. But I want to go next to you're in production in Atlanta. And you already were kind of moving stuff around because you this is a giant movie. Before we actually get you to Atlanta and be in production, tell me about the sale of that movie to Netflix, because it's a gigantic movie with Dwayne. It's also got Gal Gadot and it's got Ryan Reynolds. It's a massive movie. Tell me how that movie comes about and tell me about what must have been the most fun week of your life. taking that monster around and then ultimately selling it to our good friend Scott Stuber.
Yes. Well, look, as a fellow producer, you know that those experiences, and like you said, that week of your life, those are career moments. Those come by very few and far between. You know, and you never really know. Like they're the ones that you think that are home run slam dunks, and sometimes they're not. They're the ones you think that, okay, maybe I'll just, this could be a bunt and I can, you know, scramble to first base. And then that turns out to be the big thing. You know, you never really know. But this one we did have a good feeling about it. Extremely fortunate to have a really awesome relationship with Dwayne Johnson and his partner in Seven Bucks, Danny Garcia, and the president of production of Seven Bucks, Hiram Garcia. The whole team over there are really extraordinary, and they're very ambitious, and they're very aggressive in terms of trying to come up with new ways of creating content and new ways of putting them together. And I'll elaborate on that. So a lot of times, a lot of movie stars just, you know, kind of have the luxuries of sitting back and just getting offers. And then they can kind of cherry pick their projects as they see fit. That I think is a bit of an old system. I think it's broken. And what I love about working with Dwayne and his team is they're not afraid. They're not afraid to kind of shake it up. They're not afraid to do risks. They're not afraid to attach to pitches, which you very rarely see. And it's something that I've been pushing very aggressively the agents and managers in the town to embrace. I certainly know you have, and that's how you've been setting up a lot of your movies, have in the past and are in the future with all of your relationships with big stars as well. And so Ross and Thurber, we had just finished a movie called Skyscraper. As we were, I remember we were in San Francisco and we were at ILM and we were doing a tour of the ILM facility who were doing visual effects on Skyscraper. And I was with Ross and we were in a van and we were getting kind of driven around the facility there. And I asked him, I said, what's next? I said, what's next? And he said, I want to do a big heist movie with Dwayne Johnson and two other giant stars. And of course, you know what my answer to that, Todd, is I'm in. right? I mean, it's like in 2 seconds, I'm like, let's go, let's do it. We developed it. And just to finally answer your question, we developed the pitch. We asked Dwayne out for dinner. Ross and Hiram and myself, we took him out to dinner and we pitched it to him. He paused at the end. We thought for sure he hated it. And then he stood up and he threw his napkin on the floor and he goes, I'm in, let's go. And from there, we then went ahead and we took it. We attached, flew Rawson to London, pitched Gal, attached her to the pitch. And I also really respect and appreciate that she came on board with no distribution, no studio whatsoever. She believed just simply in, you know, in Dwayne and in the project and the team. And we took it out to all the studios and we're very, very fortunate to have a great response around town. And ultimately, the movie ended up at Netflix with Scott Stuber and Ori Marmer and Andrew Norman and Ted Sarandos. And they have been truly unbelievable partners. I know you know all those guys really well, but they really, from when they took this over, when they took this movie over, they did everything they said they would and more. They have been so supportive. They went out and let us, you know, we aggressively pursued Ryan Reynolds, which is a linchpin and huge part of this movie. And Dwayne and Ryan are awesome. And Gal and their chemistry, all three are incredible. And, you know, we picked a start date all together with all the actors, Netflix, the producers. And we started on that date. And we were 8 weeks in when we had to shut down.
Why Netflix?
I think they were just, that seemed like with 160 million subscribers at the time, I think they even added just another 16 million subscribers, which is really exciting. And you know, we just felt like we had a lot in the theatrical marketplace. Dwayne had Jumanji and Hobbs. He has, you know, we knew Black Adam was on the horizon and, you know, that we were prepping and Jungle Cruise was about to come out. So it felt like Netflix was doing really high profile movies. And, you know, they obviously were doing great work. They also are really great filmmakers. And it just felt like the perfect home to support a movie like this. And also, we really wanted to get into the streaming business. Now, look, we didn't predict a pandemic to come, but we really felt like, again, you know, in terms of Dwayne always looking to kind of like how he did his HBO show before a lot of big stars were doing, you know, premium cable. We wanted to get ahead of it. And we wanted to be one of the first in terms of the streaming business, something we really believed in. And we love the idea of 160, now 180 million people having access to it with the push of a button on a Friday night and make it must see view. And, you know, again, now in retrospect, with the pandemic, you know, kind of here, it certainly is we wish that we had Red Notice ready to go and had a great opportunity for the entire world to escape, you know, from this tragedy that's happening and just take 2 hours to really kind of, you know, escape and pause from their lives. But, you know, we'll have to wait on that and can't wait for the world to see it. Cause we really, Todd, just like you, like really just like to make big, high concept, fun escapism, you know, content and let people just check out for a few minutes and smile and laugh and just enjoy what's in front of them for a little while.
You guys are really smart. And I mean, in general, your career has been really smart. You are obviously really smart. And Dwayne is just exceptional at knowing the world and how content works. You know, you're absolutely right. In terms of doing the HBO deal before, you know, a lot of people did and then just his work ethic. It's so smart to say, we've got enough in the theatrical marketplace. Let's do something different. Let's, you know, and obviously Ryan was no stranger to it, having done the Michael Bay movie. That's and right. just being able to be so deft and be able to pivot and be able to move through all these different worlds, television, streaming, giant motion pictures, smaller motion pictures, such as this wrestling picture he did with Kevin Mischer. So it's just such an incredible career you guys have built, I mean, together. I mean, obviously he has his company, you have yours, but really every move you guys have made, Bo, seriously, has been very smart. Now doing Black Adam, you guys are just really a great team and really putting
putting such a lot of great shit together. That being said, I'm going to try to do everything I can to knock you out of it. But no, I'm joking.
half joking. Look, it's totally half joking. It's the code. It's the code of producers, right? We're all really close friends, but we're also all competitors. Of course. I respect that.
If I could figure out a way to turn back time and go get that Dave show away from Marty Bowen, I certainly would too. You guys are doing incredible work, and it is so smart. And Scott obviously is a great friend of ours, and Ori is a great friend. And part of the reason why I did this podcast was a conversation with him back in Atlanta when he was doing his Passengers. So yes, they're awesome, and clearly firing on all cylinders right now. In every shape and form. So your offices are in Los Angeles. You're on set a lot, which obviously we spoke at length about in the last iteration of this podcast. And I love that about you. And so you and I were in Atlanta, and you're living there, and you'd been there quite a while, but you were also having some issues about where you were going to shoot not just in Atlanta. Can you walk me through that?
Yeah. I mean, we had a big second unit, and we had a big location unit with our stars that we were going to shoot in overseas, that we were supposed to shoot in Rome. And so before COVID had gotten to America, we had kind of shut down the Rome unit. We were basically like, we were just beating these closures. So we had a huge crew in Rome, and then we were like, I instinctively felt like this was very real and had real steam. And then we moved them to London. So we got them out of Rome. I think we probably had about 60 people in Rome. And then we got them out to London because we felt like, okay, let's pivot, let's focus, and let's shoot in London, because it was in Italy. And we felt maybe there was an opportunity that London would be protected and would maybe possibly not get there. We obviously were wrong. And then I remember very clearly on March 11th, when the travel restrictions came down from Europe, we then on that night, I mean, we then flew the entire crew back to the States and got them out the day before the travel restrictions were placed and got them all back safely into their homes in Los Angeles and Atlanta. So we were just like constantly, like, it felt like we just had this huge monster chasing us, and we were just kind of like, just safely got all of them home. So, you know, that's to your point, back what you were talking about, creating new technologies and new innovations in our business, Todd. It's like, now we have to figure out, how are we going to do that location work for what was supposed to be in London or in Rome? We'll figure that out. But now it's going to be all visual effects, and it's going to be doubles, and it's going to be plate units, and it's going to be virtual technology, because I think it's going to be a little while till we can get over, you know, to certain locations overseas to do location work. I think stage work is going to be a real part of our business. It always has been, but I think even more. I think you see what Mandalorian is doing. I think we're going to be making movies like that a lot more in the future.
Well, let's talk for a second about that, because not everybody might totally know just offhand what you're talking about when you're saying what Mandalorian is doing, because actually Favreau did it. The first I became aware of it was in Lion King, where he and his crew had decided, we're not going to go shoot this movie on location. We're going to do it virtually. And he and Caleb Deschanel, who is one of the greatest directors of photography of all time, also happens to be Zoe Deschanel's father. I mean, he's just an incredible director of photography. And he embraced this technology where, if anybody gets the opportunity to, they should watch the behind the scenes of the making of The Lion King.
Yep,
because it really does open your eyes to what you can do, which is, you can actually block and shoot a scene inside a virtual environment, having created this virtual environment inside of a 360 degree virtual landscape, and walk over and place your camera and shoot your actors. It's mind bending, and then obviously adopted that technology for The Mandalorian, and it's so seamless. You really can't tell that it's happening. I mean, I defy anybody to tell me that Lion King, the animals aside, that the landscape looks
the landscape in the world, flawless.
Yeah, It's incredible. So what have you been talking about? Like, what are the conversations that you have? This is a big, big movie you're going to go back to. You and I both have housing in Atlanta that's been sitting there empty for 2 months. The governor has proclaimed that he's opening the state back up. So we'll see how that works out for them. But given the fact that we have to go back, got to finish these movies, what have you been talking to Dwayne about, to your partners about, to Netflix about? Like, what are the conversations practically you are having about getting back and being on location and making sure Gal Gadot and Ryan Reynolds and Dwayne Johnson feel safe, protected, that obviously will trickle down to all the other actors and crew? What kind of things are you guys talking about implementing?
Well, first of all, is you know, what we've been talking virtually every day with Dwayne, with my line producers, and with the studios, you know, in terms of like focusing more on systems and methodologies that we could, you know, kind of put into place when we return. I think that's the right energy, you know, to be focused on, because I think the date is still up in the air a little bit. It still feels a little bit early. What Governor Kemp is doing with the state is slightly different in terms of how it will impact us and how we can get people back on stages there. But, you know, there are some real good things that are going to come from this in the future for us. I just think hygienically, I think we work really hard already in the past to keep, you know, kind of everyone safe and everything clean, but we can do a lot better. And now this is causing us to look at new systems to do that. I think we can start to kind of hub out the department heads in a very different way. Before, it used to be one giant ecosystem that we all operated around and in. And if one person was sick or had a cold, then the entire crew and cast got it. So that obviously can't happen any longer. And so we have to, I've always looked for ways to make filmmaking more efficient. It's very expensive, obviously, and it's a lot of people. And while I love providing opportunity for jobs and employment, and that's very, very important, productions employ thousands and thousands of people, it's still, there are always ways to be more efficient and have smaller and tighter crews. But at the same time, there's just a fixed number of people you have to have. But I think if you start to break up, we've been talking about this kind of new hub system, if you start to hub out certain departments, so if you have like construction and you have grips and you have camera, so this way they're all working, hopefully never intersecting. So when you have first unit on stage, it can be a very small unit. It should have its own food source. Everyone should, you know, should have their own food source, so that's not intersecting. Everything needs to be wiped down at the beginning and the end of the day. Everyone will have masks on, including the cast, until we shoot. Testing is going to be a huge part of it. I think that's one thing that's going to really, we aren't going to really be able to, I think, get back until we have access to test. Because how can you have actors interact with each other, you know, in very close situations unless they are tested and feel safe? And then possibly we're talking about hiring extras for the run of show. So this way we try and kind of isolate them and keep them, so we don't have people maybe that are, you know, extras come on, they go down, they leave town, they come back. You know, so, and the same thing with day players on crew. Possibly just have them on the entire time and not have day players on, because day players have the ability to come on for a day, they leave, they can go somewhere else, they come back and maybe can potentially bring something back. So the safety of the cast and the crew is so vital, you know, to us. And I think we're going to come out with a lot of new systems that I think is going to be very hard and challenging at the beginning, but I think it will settle in and I think people will like it. I think people feel better. I think you're going to see a lot, not only from, you know, obviously protect everyone from, you know, from COVID-19, but also I just think from the flu, from colds. I really think it will come out of this stronger on the other side. At least that's my certain, you know, certainly my hope.
Yeah. I mean, I keep thinking about it like a submarine with the flood doors, right? So if there's a breach in something, you shut the door so that they can't flood the entire entire submarine, or you know, fire doors in a hotel. We have to just be able to, if God forbid somebody gets sick, shut the door and that keep it isolated to a very, very small group of people at worst. Because you can't just have this thing flow. And it's funny because there's so many things that we just didn't even think about and took for granted. I mean, just in terms of craft service,
that's right.
A day before we were all sent home, I just standing there looking at craft service going, this is not good. This is
no,
there's
no.
Just a bunch of bowls of chips out and just finger sandwiches, and there's a whole thing of crudité out yes. there. This is not the way we should be operating in the best of times, by the way.
That's right.
Just in terms of hygiene and making sure people just don't get food related illnesses, you know. I think all of that is such good ideas. And then, you know, look, testing for sure has to. I do believe that each individual movie company, we can figure out testing. It does feel like we have the resources, and it's not an insane amount of people to test and then to do monitoring with temperatures or things like that in the short term until we figure this out more permanently. But it does not feel impossible to be able to, you know, there's a lot of people that are the pendulum has swung so far. Like, let's just take over a hotel or a fort and just it's never going to work. There's just nobody's going to want to do our business if that's the case. You know, they're just going to be like, that. What do I want to be a fucking day player if I'm going to be locked in some weird hotel like The Shining for 3 months? It's not happening. You know, so
it's just not that real. It's just not that realistic. And you're totally right. It's like, I think we're going to be really good. I think it's not going to be perfect. Right. And we're all going to have to, you know, learn from one another. You know what I mean? It's like you and I already, you know, talk about our productions and our shows to one another and certain systems you do, but that's going to have to even increase, right. In terms of like, there's our peer group of other producers. We all, you know, kind of going to have to be locked at the hip as we kind of re-enter into this new normal that we're going to be in. And I really have been having that conversation with every single person I talk to, every studio executive, every agent, every manager, writer, director. I'm like, we're all in this together. Like, the business either survives because we are, you know, shoulder to shoulder, or it dies and it goes away because we weren't. Like, it's like, I just feel like we all have to be united, a united front, and figure this out and share all our systems, how to make this become a perfect machine, because it's the only way we're going to really be able to continue. Like, look, in terms of, it's great that the streaming mechanism is, and the streaming platforms are here in 2020. It's incredible and very exciting. And you're seeing everyone, you know, with Disney Plus and Amazon and Netflix, Hulu, all that is there. And so we have access to our audience. That's extraordinary for what you and I do. And for the creation of content. But at the same time, is we need new content. And that is what now has to be, you know, kind of our biggest kind of, you know, hurdle that we have to overcome. And, you know, I think we can only do it as a family and do it as, you know, as a team.
We keep forgetting, everybody who talks about this virus and talks about moving forward and talks about lifting the stay at home orders, unless this is, I mean, this is obviously a very dangerous virus, clearly not that that's been proven, but unless it's like some sort of like world killer, if you get it and you get over it, there should be immunities there. Like we're screwed, then all bets are off. I mean, it's just like, if this thing can just keep reinfecting you and being so deadly, then that's reasonable right now. I'm not a scientist and I'm not a doctor, but it would reasonably feel like if you get it and you recover from it, which they're saying hundreds of thousands of people are, and a lot of people are
just in California. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. And then other people, it would stand to reason, are immune to it in the same way that people are immune to things like flus and things like that. And that's just a weird genetic disposition that you're lucky to have. Those people are going to exist in the world, right? They're going to be part of our crew. They're going to be the actors. So it's not like we're starting from zero every time. There has to be some sort of feels like there has to be some sort of positive from all of the people that are getting it and are asymptomatic and are getting over it and feeling better, that we're not going to have to be just like every single person is a potential threat. You know, I know that people can carry stuff in on their hands and things like that, but I think we've all learned that masks and social distancing and washing your hands and not sneezing into your hand and then grabbing a doorknob, I unless you're a sociopath, I feel like people now at least are understanding that. Even the people that are out there protesting because they don't want to stay at home anymore, it's those people. I mean, they're not murderers. They're at least intelligent enough not to, you know, to wash their hands and to sneeze into their elbow and stay away from people if they're not feeling well. And so I think and again, we're all in the middle of this, and it's fucking tragic, and we're all emotional about it. But at some point, there has to be some sort of reckoning of like, oh, okay, wow, it seems like 75% of the population has at least, it, you know, maybe just in Atlanta or in Cuff, wherever it is, has had it. And so we're fighting a fight against a few outliers as opposed to this gigantic wave of everybody potentially could get it, and we don't know because no one's ever had it. So yeah, so it's like that also gives me some comfort of like, okay, well, you know, if this, there was a report of the LA Times today saying, you know, it's been here a long time, that they're now finding that it could be up to 460,000 people have have had it and didn't know it or thought it was something else. And until we get all that testing,
5% of the population could have it, right? It's like, right. And these serology tests, like that could be a really big breakthrough for us too, back to your point about people having immunities, right? So these, you know, there are a lot of tests, there's some wonky ones out there, but these FDA approved serology tests like will immediately inform if you had it. And then yes, to your point, like let's pray that if you have immunities that you don't get it again a second time. We've also read some articles about that in South Korea, but you know, again, it's still so early. But yes, you're right. I mean, we are at the very front of this. This is uncharted waters for all of us. So we don't know. So we are figuring out this roadmap along the way together without able to draw anything. I mean, and outside of this Spanish flu 100 years ago, sure, there's some lessons there, but we are in a whole different world.
Oh, completely.
That was 1.5 billion people, right? It's like, there is no technology or communication. Now we're 7.5 billion people now. It's like, and we are in the forefront of it, in the front lines. And that's where we have to really kind of like dig deep and really work together and crack this, how we're going to do it. Cause we all have to get back to work. We have to.
And the thing I will say about crews in general is their primary thing is safety. Their primary thing is let's get to work and let's get home in better shape than when we got there. And they, you know, in every way, shape and form, and just in terms of safety of, cause you know, there's a lot of shit that can really hurt you on a movie set. And just the safety protocols that these men and women do every day, they will adhere to them probably better than the general population, I would imagine, because that's just the way they are. They come to work and they're no nonsense. They're professionals, and they want, you know, and we have these safety briefings every morning. And obviously in the safety briefing every morning, it's to be wear gloves and then take them off or wash your hands. And, you know, all of those things you're talking about, you know, to make sure that we stay clean. We're going to have, you know, I'm sure we're going to have a lot more toilets for people, just to make sure that we're, you know, keeping things clean and keeping people safe. That's one thing that also makes me feel good about it is, you know, between, you know, the curve being on the backside of the curve, a lot of people having it, we're not just going to be fighting this unwinnable war.
No, and that's you're right. I mean, look, in terms of crews, I admire the crews that you and I get to work with. There is a militaristic mentality kind of behind it all. They take their jobs very seriously. Safety is the utmost importance to them and to the producers and all the way in the stars and the director all the way through. And so I think they will fold in because that's how they operate, right? They operate like an army. We go and we invade a location and we try to be as efficient and economical as possible. On that same note, though, Todd, I think it's important to think about crew members are tough. They show up when they're not feeling great. You know what I mean? They push through. They know that everyone is needed in that crew to have a productive day. So we're going to have to try and change that conversation a little bit and let everyone know that we have very liberal policies now. If you even have a cold, stay home, right? We'll pay you. We'll take care of you. Don't come in. Don't that's one area we're going to have to change the thinking, right? Because listen, I know it needs meat for me. That goes for me too. I know when I'm like, I've never missed a day, knock wood, right, in 25 years of producing, I've never missed a day of showing up on set. And I have been feeling like hell. You know what I mean? It's like, and I've showed up because I felt like I was needed there. But that can't be the thinking anymore.
No.
We have to change that now and really have to make people, including ourselves, be like, you know what? I'm not going to risk, you know, other people getting sick or a whole crew or a whole shutdown. And we're going to have to really let people know it's okay. It's all right. You'll be paid as long as you need. Take care of yourself. We're there. And that's so, again, these are just new little ways that we're going to have to adjust our thinking.
Well, this has been such a massive gut punch / punch in the face to the entire industry that, you know, the realization that one crew member could take down a whole movie and shut it down is so great that it, I can't imagine there's going to be any production that wouldn't be like, no, that is the definition of Pennywise. And like, we need to sure that we are very, very Pennywise in this one. We have to be like, okay, that, yep, take the day off. No problem. Actor, you're not feeling good. Don't worry about it. We'll figure it out. We'll work around you no matter what it costs. I mean, the day cost compared to shutting a f-ing movie down is nothing. Is nothing. So, so you're in Santa Monica, you're on set, and now so everybody's home. So walk me through, what are you doing? Like, give me, I know you said you're doing Zoom meetings and things like that, and you're just, you know, you're trying to go about your normal day, and you've converted your wife's office space, I'm sure she's thrilled with this, into your space. But beyond that, just in terms of just, you've been home now for at least a month, and and Dwayne's home, and, you know, so I'm sure you're communicating with him, like, What are you guys doing? You know, you have a movie that was supposed to come out. You have a movie in prep. You have a movie in production. What are your communications and kind of how are you just managing the pure business aspect of your gigantic company?
Well, I think a combination of just my natural resting set, my natural resting kind of self is optimistic. It's always been just my nature and always try and kind of, you know, kind of look and identify and take advantage of new opportunities. I also think it goes kind of, you know, part of what we do as producers, right? It's like, I really live by the mantra of turning lemons into lemonade. And that's kind of what, you know, we deal with every day. You know, it's like, you and I lead with no for an answer, and then how do we change that into yes, or how do we go over that obstacle, or how do we go around it? So we have been looking at our slate actively. There's a book series that I control, and it's a live action book series for family audience, and I'm changing it to be animated. And so now I've really kind of, I don't know a lot about that space, but I've really educated myself and all of the animation facilities, all of the buyers, all of the distributors, and we'll go ahead and get that and get that done. And, you know, who knows, that could turn out to be a big, you know, knock wood, a big animated franchise for us. And that's also something that could keep going if God forbid there's another shutdown or this has to go longer. My brother-in-law is a writer, Emmy award-winning writer on Bob's Burgers. And at the very beginning of all this, I was talking to him and he was like, yeah, we are staying active. We are continuing to make episodes of Bob's Burgers. And that just really immediately lit a spark in my head. It's like, OK, we need to be doing the same thing. I know that's not our core business. It's not our brand. But that's an area that can really protect the company to stay afloat if God forbid, we have to kind of, you know, bear down like we are right now. So That's one area that I've been doing. At the same time, like, we cut a sizzle reel on Red Notice that we cut, like, we took all the footage and we virtually cut about a 3-minute sizzle reel, sent it to, you know, to our cast. We sent it to Netflix. We sent it to all the marketing people just to keep them excited about the movie, let them start thinking about ways they can, you know, kind of release the film when we do ultimately finish it. That was something that we did. And then really, like, on Black Adam, that extra time is something that for that extra prep time we have now, we really embrace. We've been storyboarding the entire movie that we weren't planning on. We're doing more previs than we imagined. We're spending more time to try and make the script better. You know, it's like, so on top of some personal things that I've been trying to take advantage of the time with, it's like really just trying to put this, infuse it back into all of our projects or find ways to reboot projects. And you know, and at the same time, I've been doing some Zoom cocktails with you and yes. some close friends to keep us social and at the same time really talk about what's going on in the business.
I gotta say, man, thank you for inviting me to that. You're very gracious of you, and I honestly do look forward to it every week. I'm doing this, so I'm actually talking to a lot of you guys just for really in depth, but it's just so nice to be on these, see your faces and see everybody sort of in the same thing. You need this community. We need to be connecting. We need to be talking to each other for our mental health. Yes. We really, really do. It's so important. And speaking of that, what are you doing to stay creative? What are you doing to light that fire under your ass to just stay creative and stay feeling, that's keep planting that spark of what got you into this in the first place?
That's a good question, because I'm going to be super honest with you. I was struggling on the creative side, like in the first couple of weeks. I was able to move things forward, right? But I felt like I was pushing paper, and I felt like I was just, you know, kind of putting one foot in front of the other in terms of from a business point of view. But, you know, you and I are creative producers. This is a very creative job. And I wasn't having, like, I'm a very active dreamer. I wasn't having any dreams, or at least certainly not having no recall on them. Like, I wasn't having new ideas kind of pop into my head. So I really have been trying to kind of get that spark going again. And what's been helping is I have been watching a ton of, new series that I've wanted to watch, ones in the past and certainly new ones. I'm a podcast junkie. So I go every day at 5 o'clock. I do a long walk, and I live up in one of the canyons, and I'm able to kind of have a pretty, almost like a hike like type walk. It's about 4 miles. So I'm able to listen to two or three podcasts. And I try not to get caught up in too much of, you know, I listen to The Daily Off, or I listen to the Wall Street Journal podcast, or I listen to some TED Talks or some coronavirus updates, but I really try and listen to fiction. There's, like, you know, there's a podcast that I love called The Edge of Sleep that I love so much. I was turned onto it by one of my executives that I am developing a project now with the writers of that podcast, you know, so at least, like, I don't necessarily feel like I'm at 100% on the creative level. I still feel I've, like, amped it back up, and it's been coming from probably consuming other content. And, I started with my youngest daughter this thing called the Early Bird Movie Club, and we wake up very early and try and watch a movie together. And
that's great.
You know, it's fun. Awesome. And then also, I just the homeschooling going on and watching kind of like the, you know, kind of what they're doing in terms of they're doing all these art projects and they're writing fantasy short stories and these things that are, like, I would have really never have known or been able to witness, because I'm not at home that often, you know? Right. And so it's, so that's where I've been finding it a little bit, you know?
That's great. And you were about to go on one of your big Dwayne Johnson press tours with packed premieres all over the world, thousands and thousands of people, shoulder to shoulder, screaming, hugging, drinking, everybody getting on another small plane with 20 people and then flying.
Why does that feel like years ago, Todd?
You guys are all not. I mean, you guys are all. You're on the front lines of this thing, man. Are you? Is there any discussion about how the hell we reignite marketing and the publicities? More specifically, has anybody talked about that?
I have to a degree with Dwayne and also with Emily Blunt as well in regard to Jungle Cruise, and with Sean Bailey and a lot of the marketing team, publicity team at Disney. But because it is so important, one of the real reasons we were the ones who really wanted the movie to have a full year push on the release. I mean, you're seeing a lot of movies go into the fall 2020. You're seeing a lot of movies go into Christmas 2020. We were really passionate about going into late summer 2021 with the hope, let's hope, because Dwayne and Emily, it was important to them to really travel the world with this movie. They are very passionate about it. They care about it. They want to interact with the fans. They want the Jungle Cruise theme park rides operating all around the world. We want to be able to be in the Disney theme parks. So we need to get those up and running. We need them up and running, A, for Disney. It's critical, and the cruise lines, and, you know, it's like, and B, they want to be there, to your point. They want to interact. Now, look, it may be a different way that we do it now, and maybe we can't high five and hug and do all those things, to your point, that we did in the past. But still, you want to have that physical interaction with people. It will now be at a distance, I'm sure. But at the same time, is like, that's what our hope is and why we moved it. So we can start to think about a global tour for the movie that lets really people interact with Dwayne and Emily. That's where our head and conversations have been
at. Fantastic. All right. So I wanted to give you guys, because I've been talking about this on this podcast during this pandemic a lot, but you're the exact right person to talk to, because, you know, obviously you're going to be in the middle of these conversations as things get heated back up. And here's what I want you to talk to Dwayne and Sean Bailey and Bob Iger and everybody about. I believe the way to help save the theaters is to engage the talent with the consumer in a more direct way in theater. So what we should be doing is Dwayne and Emily and you and your director and all of your you know that are in the movie and the writers, take all that behind the scene footage and cut something together for in theater before the movie. Then instead of these thousands and thousands of junkets that we do one junket, but opening weekend, sit Emily and Dwayne in front of a Zoom and Zoom in to different theaters opening weekend and answer questions. And let's put some props in the theaters and let's maybe get a director's commentary of the movie and have a separate channel of the audio that is very easy to hook up through a radio mic, and that you can, if you choose to, get headphones and listen to the director commentary so that you come back the second time to listen to the director commentary. There's all these things we can do in theater that we're not f-ing doing that as filmmakers we can do that has no extra cost, and we can drive people and back into the theaters rather than just another goddamn Entertainment Tonight segment. Let's put this stuff in the theater so you can only get it if you go to the theater. And maybe it means one fewer screening, or we have to move, we have to move the screening a little bit later or start a little bit earlier so that you can have these interstitial stuff in the middle. But I know Dwayne would do it. I know that he shows up at theaters, but I mean,
he shows up. Yeah.
With this technology now, Bo, you guys could be somewhere opening weekend with a Zoom thing and Zoom into theaters, go, guys, what'd you think of the movie? And take questions live. It's very easy to do. Somebody could do it with a fucking iPhone, and you guys could do this. And it would mean something, because you go to the theater not knowing, are you going to be in the theater? And by the way, if you're not in the theater, you still can watch it on the screen, Zoomed, watching them answer the questions that the other people have, because they're probably questions you were wondering. You guys have to do this, because short of just shrinking the windows, which is what everybody keeps talking about, you guys could be on the forefront, Disney especially, to make going to movies magical. I literally watched Disney Plus and I sat through all of the behind the scenes of the American Idol and Mulan and Star Child, because I just love that shit. And that's what people who go to movies, we're not using that. You know, there's a guy every time I turn around, there's a guy with a camera filming everything. Where's that shit go? It used to go on DVDs, right? But DVDs don't exist anymore. Sit in theater. Let people peek behind the curtain and let people and talk to Dwayne. Let people talk to you and and that is going to drive people back to the theaters. That's what's going to get people to go, because it's going to be an experience that they can only get live if they go. That's my soapbox.
Well, first of all, I love your passion, and thank you for coming on Producer's Guide today.
This is not controversial. Literally everybody says I'm so controversial about this. I'm not.
I love your passion, and it's funny because you sound a lot of like our conversations, right? It's like, you know, we talk a lot about how do we be first, how do we do things differently. Like listen, publicity and press is vital to movies, right? But it's like, why? Anytime I ask, why do we do it this way? Because they say that's how we've done it for the last 30 years. Well, who cares how we've done it? Like, let's go ahead and let's change it all. If there's ever a time, is now, right? To your exact point. Like, people want to continue the experience. They want to start the experience before the movie. They want to then experience the movie, and then they want to continue it when they go home, whether it's on their phone or Disney Plus on their TV or their computer or whatever. It's like the whole junketing system is crazy, right? In terms of, like, again, publicity is important, but like having the same a different person come in and ask the same question over and over and over again. It's like, no, let's create things that will live forever.
Exactly. Here's what you do. Everybody shoots their side of their thing, and you ask 30 questions, all the same question. How was the chemistry between you and Emily Blunt? What was it like shooting it? Was it daunting taking on a game? A ride. I can tell you all the questions they're going to ask. So how about this? Have you ever been to a silent disco?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Of course.
Just get a silent disco headphone. Yeah, and how about you just you take 2 hours and you have Emily and Dwayne watch the movie and record what they say. Remember that? Oh, look at you. Look how stupid you look. Oh, you're looking. Yeah. You think I'm stupid? I've seen them do 1,000 of these already. They're amazing. Yes, they're so cute together. Do that. Do the commentary of the movie. And by the way, you want to listen to Dwayne and Emily talk during the movie and do that? Watch it. Or watch it first, then come back and watch it again and just listen to Dwayne and Emily bust on each other for 2 hours. I'll go back a second time and do that. Yeah, why not? And then you're looking over at the person with the silent disco headphones laughing their ass off. You're like, what the fuck am I missing? So you go back the next time and you do it. There's so many ways that are so low impact. If we just, as filmmakers, get more involved in this process, that we can save the theaters. I am telling
you. And by the way, you can Zoom. You could Zoom in live to, you know, to 15,000 theaters. Do you know what I mean? Let it be Dwayne and Emily, and let them Zoom in live for 5 minutes before the movie starts, which you can only get that experience in the theater.
And you got to tweet that and as soon as you sit down. And you sit down and says, "Hey, everybody, tweet your things to so and so," and you have somebody in your social media team taking the questions. Okay, this is a question from Los Angeles, question from Kentucky, this is a question from New York, question from DC, and for 20 minutes before the or after the movie or whatever it is, you're watching it. Fine. There's so many ways.
Exactly.
You can do this.
Exactly.
You're a big deal. You should be talking to Dwayne. Dwayne, I'm telling you right now, just Dwayne doing a commentary with Emily on the movie, you'll double your box office. I promise
100%.
You.
And those guys are on the exact same page. Trust me. It's like they've been talking about that for a long time in terms of, you know, completely just reinventing the publicity model and how do we go ahead and create content and interact with their fans. I mean, it is what Dwayne does on his Instagram, right? He takes fans from the very, very beginning, even early days, and takes them all the way through to the very end. And that's where we have to be, is that direct engagement, right? It's like, you look at the platforms that are working in social media, right? It's like, look at like TikTok. Like, my daughters are obsessed with TikTok, right? It's like, that's that they are able to interact, they create, they feel part of it. It's like, there can't be a distance anymore to it. Those days are over. That's a very old way of thinking.
Yeah. Like, for example, that 1917 thing they dropped on YouTube about how they made it, they should have never released that on YouTube. It should have been only something you could have watched to stay after credits to watch. Okay, see what you just saw? Did your head just explode? Now watch this. Here is how we did it. And people will be like, dude, you know how they fucking did that? No, they took the camera and they put it on. You gotta go to the theater. You gotta see it. First of all, you gotta see it in the theater because it's insane. It's so epic. And then stay after. After the credits. You're going to see it takes 15 minutes. You're going to blow your fucking mind. That would have driven so much traffic to the theater. But instead, it was dropped on YouTube as like a marketing thing. And people were like, well, that's cool. And the movie crushed it. But if we're all in this to help, you know, do the thing we love, which is sit in a dark room and watch something together, we can do it, Bo. And you specifically.
I agree. No, all of us.
This was all a trap. This was all a trap just to get you here. So you tell Dwayne Johnson he's got to do that.
Got it. It was very effective trap. hopefully he'll listen. Just I'll tell him to fast forward to the end so he doesn't lose an hour. He doesn't have to lose an hour of his life.
Listen, very busy life.
But you know, it's like, you're right. I mean, it's like we owe it to the exhibition business. We owe it to our business. You know what I mean? We now have the platforms. Everyone next year will have everyone by the, you know, in the next 2 months, we'll have HBO Max in May 27th. And then Peacock will be coming early right now for Comcast subscribers, will be in July. Like, we'll have all the platforms working. Disney Plus is 50 million subscribers already, right? It's like Netflix obviously is there. It's like, and they could drive people to the theaters, bring them back to the platform and try and lock them in as much as we can. And just really now more than ever is a time to really reboot a lot of systems and things that we've done in the past, that it's time to change it. It really is. So I'm with you, and I will relay to the team, my friend.
Silent disco.
They will be excited.
silent disco in theaters. Just everybody, you can watch two or three different things. You want to listen to the director. You want to listen to you talk as a producer from the Nuts and Bolts. You want to listen to Dwayne talk. Remember those when we used to get those Criterion editions, man? Directors' commentaries were life, you know? Imagine sitting.
Amazing.
God damn. So we got to put that back into theaters.
How many silent discos do you go to? How many, just before
well,
we go?
What
many,
I like to do, I like to do... You know, you walk at 5. I just do a silent disco. And the reason it's silent, it's just me.
I'd love
and my
to
kids are like, there goes dad again. He's outside listening to his EDM music.
On Friday Zoom, can you go ahead and get those headsets on and show some of your moves? I would love to see that, dude.
Right? And I'm telling you, the other thing is, I know we're joking, but I'm being serious again. If it's green or blue, you know, you're listening to the director, you're listening to Dwayne and thing, and you could switch back and forth. And if and then you're going, oh, what are you listening to right now? I'm going to say, I mean, you're not going to obviously say anything out loud to piss everybody off, but you're, but people will go, oh, well, I should listen to Red. You know, there's so many ways you can have fun with this live in theater. All right, that's it for my soapbox today. Thank you for listening. And I like to ask everybody, best day on set, but lately I've been asking, what's the best thing you've seen? Not it. If you could limit it to the business and sort of your creative process and just our and the people that are kind of around and creatively, what's the best thing you've seen kind of during this pandemic? What has given you hope that we're gonna come out of this and be stronger as an industry?
Well, first of all, just the amount of people giving has been extraordinary, and the amount of like of watching, you know, kind of new technology. You know, I watched the concert on Sunday, which I saw to 21 million people watched, you know, all those artists recording from their homes. I thought that was so brilliant, the way people immediately adapted to this and turned their homes when they were living in it, whether they're in a small studio apartment or, you know, or you're Eddie Vedder and you're in your recording studio playing this old organ. You know, I just thought that was so cool and so important. And then I sat and watched with my family. It was so powerful. And then they dropped in interstitials of what's going on with, you know, with the healthcare workers, which when you get to see it is very powerful. So in terms of that, I've been so impressed by all of the artists that have been giving back and all of the people and, you know, all of the healthcare workers, obviously, that have been just working just relentlessly and selflessly. That's really blown me away. I'm so proud of all of the citizens of the world, how they have really stepped up to task to this. And then in terms of, as you get to a, you know, a smaller level of our business also, I feel like people are continuing to work. My conversations with studio executives and with representative, you know, with agents and managers, there has been a real compassion, you know, in all those conversations. There's been a real empathy just in general. There's been a real sensitivity, which has not necessarily been part of Hollywood vernacular. And I think that can stay. I certainly hope it does, because I really believe you can, you know, be in this business and make great stories and great content and be nice to one another and be good to one another and be empathetic to one another. I just think it makes for a better final product. And I've been witnessing a lot of that. And then lastly is just the technological, you know, breakthroughs in terms of, you know, what Stagecraft and ILM is doing. Like I mentioned Mandalorian in terms of, and you were talking about like 360 LED screens, like that is going to increase dramatically, that system. Before, that was something we were experimenting with on both. We're doing it on Red Notice and on Black Adam. But I think now you're going to start to see that kind of go through the roof. And I also just think in terms of how people have really felt how important their friendships are, their family is, relationships are, just in terms of like connecting virtually and staying connected. I just think that's something that really, really rose to the top, is community and how badly we all need one another. You know, I just think those are areas that I really, really blown me away.
Yep. Amen, brother. Well, I love you, man. Thank you for doing this.
Too.
You're the best. I really appreciate you taking this time. And it's always, dude, it's always good to have you on. I stalked you to an inch of your life. You're an important person to me and you're doing such great work. Congratulations on everything. And I'll see you Friday, brother. I'll see you Friday for our cocktails.
See you Friday night. We'll raise a glass for sure.
Appreciate
you so much. And thank you for reactivating this podcast. There is a lot of love for it. Congratulations. I saw Spotify, you know, has come on board to distribute it as well. which is so cool. And it's just, and you really have really taken, you become the core of the business of information, not only for keeping all of us connected, but also to be able to move it forward to the younger generations. And, and that's something that, that I know means a lot to you, certainly means a lot to me. And I really, really appreciate that. And I'm very grateful for you. So thank you, Todd.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate it.
Brother.
Thank you.
Thank
you. All right, bud. Take care. Be safe. Love to your family.
You too.
Take care.
I'll talk to you soon. Thanks. Bye.